Welcome to Tactical Permaculture. I've worked on projects ranging from the poorest to richest clients, from inner cities to suburbs to farmlands to remote wilderness, from the eco-war front lines to celebrity backyards. In over 25 years of service to the earth and the community of life, I've learned that in the fight for sustainable survival, growing is half the battle. Please go to tacticalpermaculture.com to read my blog, watch my videos, view my photos, access web applications, and click on the join membership link to access exclusive features. March 14th, 2024, episode number 115. Apologize for the stormy background, but it gives a little bit of ambient effect. This is just an update on the status of this off-grid, off-road, desert homesteading lifestyle. And I have been avoiding going into any professional, medical, clinical environment for a number of years for various reasons that I've explained in the past, but I'm not the only one who, for various reasons, is avoiding those settings more than ever in these times. And for a lot of people, and for all I know, including me, that could be very ill-advised, no pun intended, because if you have symptoms that you're trying to ignore and you're kicking the can on things, then it would only get worse, and it'd be better to know as much as you can and intervene as early as possible. That's just a little bit of a disclaimer. Certainly nothing that I say about what I'm doing should be taken as advice. It's just reporting back from my lifestyle experiment. But it is apt for long-term isolation, long-term expedition, survival, disaster preparedness, all that kind of stuff. The lifestyle of wanting to understand what you encounter, what you have to deal with when there is no doctor present, and accessing, you become your own first responder. So this is a bit of a med theme show. The topic I want to address is something I've probably covered to a degree in the past, but I just want to give it its own episode because it's fresh on my mind, having completed another cycle of what I would call do-it-yourself basic dental hygiene routines beyond brushing and flossing, and beyond what would be a daily routine. I'm just going to say that I feel blessed that the very poor dental hygiene habits I had for most of my life, just being an urban dweller and being poor and having a relatively poor diet, even though I thought it was healthy, it was still filled with all kinds of carbs and sugars and calories, even if I thought they were organic or thought they were healthier, more natural, or more whole food based, there was still a lot of slowly growing cavities and just poor oral health because of not having done a lot of research and application of do-it-yourself strategies, and certainly not having insurance and not having the financial means to do routine care before, or when it was more accessible to me, not so much financially, but logistically, and I'll say to be very to put it mildly, the epidemiological conditions were less alarming earlier stages in life. But I have no one to blame but myself. I definitely wish that it would have behooved me, and it would behoove anyone, to not take all forms of medicine into their own hands, but certainly to be as educated as possible so that you make smart decisions. Sometimes doing whatever the doctor tells you also is not the wisest choice. So the more educated you are, the better. That's the PSA for now. But what has worked for me to manage and to sort of stabilize those cavities, to prevent toothaches and basically, through some mixture of science and miracle and luck and skill, I've been able to stabilize those cavities, and I've been able to have relatively what I would imagine to be decent breath, and probably a average, if not slightly above average, sort of gum health relative to the sort of inevitability of gingivitis to some degree or another. So my strategy has been brushing with coconut oil as a sort of experimental hybrid of oil pulling and brushing with a natural substance other than highly chemically fortified whatever the hell goes into toothpastes. So I'm post-toothpaste, and I have been relying on a method of any time I consume anything very acidic or anything with a lot of sugar, which feeds acid-producing bacteria in the mouth, I will brush, and I will brush with, depending on the time of year, the it's either going to be a sort of a congealed little chunk of coconut oil that I'll mash up in my mouth to get it warm enough to be liquid, or if it's a warmer time of year, then I will just dip the toothbrush in oil and make the rounds, thoroughly brushing without I would say going to excess. And interestingly, this strategy has stopped any of what I used to take for granted, which was gums bleeding every time I brushed my teeth. I remember it being that way even in the times when I brushed most frequently. So paradoxically, if you don't brush, it's reasonable to expect that if you brush after a while of not brushing, your gums would bleed because they're sort of more diseased and more just weak, not necessarily weaker, but I don't know exactly what the science is behind whether or not they would get toughened up. But for me, it was a normal thing. If I brushed my teeth, my gums would bleed, not profusely, but there would just be blood in the spit and whatnot. Sorry to be TMI or too graphic, but for me, the coconut oil brushing has made for no bleeding whatsoever. And the only time I will see any blood is if I don't floss every day. When I do floss, there's maybe a couple of points where there'll be a bit of blood, and I don't have the straightest or prettiest teeth, and they're not. The points at which some of the teeth kind of are more tangled than I wish they were, that's where typically more plaque builds up and more of and a little more blood can occur from just very careful and very methodical flossing. But I'm pleased to say that I attribute my pretty miraculous and knock on bamboo that it lasts. Okay, that was the bamboo. Always within arm's reach of some bamboo. But yeah, I attribute this blessed state of no major signs of, yeah, I mean, there's some mild reddening of the gums, there's some recession that I think is unavoidable, and luckily it's not exposing anything that's very shocking to look at. It's not creating a lot of foul smells, and it's not creating pain. And what it, so the sort of scales of maintenance that I do between brushing at least twice a day with that method and not overdoing it, and kind of gauging that appropriateness by the fact that there's no bleeding, but that it's thorough enough. And then over time I will notice that plaque is building up, and then I have a dental toolkit that has the plaque scraper and the sort of the hook and the flat scraper and the mirror and I think another one. It's not the biggest dental toolkit, and there's plenty of advisement against using such a kit without having professional dental training, and I get that, and so I use it sparingly and cautiously, and I would prefer not to use it, but I got it because of the fact that I knew I was going to have to be reliant on it, and I was going to have to roll the dice, and there would be a trade-off. I take my oral health and my life into my own hands by separating myself from the system where professionals would be providing that service for me. And I don't recommend that. And it's part of that disclaimer of saying, you know, if you have access to it, you're comfortable. I know for me, I'm happy to say that the I believe it's called the World Health Network, which is an organization that is, I would say, they're advocates they're public health activists who are not in the pocket of whatever conspiratorial cabal you could blame for the abysmal state of public health and epidemiological official responses. I don't want to go into that at all. I've gone into it at length in the past, but I do to this day. My paradigm shifted, and now the People's CDC and the World Health Network are two of the digests that I get in my news feed, my inbox, to be able to stay current with what they're publishing and what they're studying and researching. And they've done a series, the World Health Network, done a series on clinical environments, organizations where they've established new protocols for ventilation and masking and various other mitigations that they're sustaining and investing in and iterating upon, and I would say not just in response to the COVID-19 pandemic, but as a result of the lessons from the ongoing lessons of COVID-19, which I think have exposed a lot of inequalities, systemic inequalities, disparities in who is most at risk of being victimized by a very hubristic public, where public health has become a sort of a nemesis and a source of conspiratorial thinking. So I'm glad to know that the opportunities do exist, few and far between, where if you wanted to be very cautious and go into a medical environment and say, hey, I'm immunocompromised, or I live with immunocompromised people, it's very important that if I go to the dentist has these mitigations in place, that they're not going to go away just because COVID hospitalizations are down. They're going to stay in place because it's just... It's an appropriate way to think about think about what you're doing. You're concentrating people in an environment that I mean, that kind of goes for from public transportation to a medical environment, but certainly in a clinical medical environment, you have a perfect storm of dominoes ready, already wobbling, ready to fall over, and just a stiff breeze is going to knock them over. So anything that can be done to at least make those environments more more intelligent in their strategies, I endorse that. And certainly there's a long way to go. And we just look at the plumes of MRSA and Candida auris, I believe, is another hospital concentrated. People make that adage, you know, you go to the hospital is where you go to die. People that will resist it to the bitter end. I'm not an extremist in that sense, but I'm just kind of reiterating the importance and the value of people evolving their tactics. It's a tactical situation. And so, yeah, for me, I have been relying on this do-it-yourself dental hygiene maintenance routine. And believe me, every time I get the inkling that it's time to break out that dental hygiene kit, I'm white knuckling it, because I know that, I mean, luckily I have very steady hands, but it's very awkward, and trying to get used to using mirrors. I've even put on headlamps and used sort of a one of those mirrors that you hold up in your hand, and then it's very awkward to try to orient yourself without a lot of experience. If you're not doing this every day, you weren't trained to do it, you only do it once in a while, the risk for me that I'm white knuckling through, meaning I'm very cautious and very concerned, and it's very stressful. Not that there aren't techniques to relax into it as much as possible, but it takes a lot of care and concentration to not gash oneself. I'm trying to very carefully, and also don't have that neat tool that they use in dentist offices, where they have an air suction tube that removes blood and whatever the broken off pieces of plaque are, just continually as they're moving along. They're keeping a well lit, well drained through that suction tube environment, so that they're able to maintain a precise use and targeting of those tools. Whereas for me, without that, there's saliva, there's blood. I'm trying to manage that, and it's kind of a you know what show. But so far, luckily, I've been able to use those tools effectively, sparingly, to remove the major buildup of plaque at the base of the teeth and around, yeah, basically the concentration being on the inside of the teeth, kind of under the tongue area is where there's the most, and that's an awkward area to get light and a mirror reflection of. But to be able to pick, to use that hook to very carefully pick that out. Inevitably there's blood, but luckily it's very superficial and goes away quickly. But in the process of it, yeah, you're breaking off those chunks of plaque on the inside lower teeth, where it tends to build up the most. And I've looked around on the other parts of the inside, and really there's not much buildup on the top or bottom. On the inside, there would tend to be just, you know, typical small amounts of buildup around the gums on the outside, and discoloration on the outside. Yeah, I don't know. I'm limiting myself to just doing a very basic, very careful, just get the big stuff and whatever kind of is that mushy white plaque, tartar, I believe, interchangeably, or the terms would mean the softer, fresher material and the more sort of solidified older material. There's that continuum, and between using the hook on the inside and the scraper on the outside very gently and sparingly, I've been able to maintain a state of being able to remove stains as they build up that aren't the stains themselves aren't, I wouldn't consider them necessarily to be the most medically threatening of aspects of this. It's more the plaque and the tartar that are gonna facilitate progression of disease states. But it's nice to feel like I've got some pearly whites, even if they're, you know, getting older and getting a little more translucent. If I can get rid of at least the most superficial of stains with a light touch, and the method that I used most recently to avoid expensive or fancy or more chemical based or high tech teeth whitening techniques. I did use on the scraper tool, add just a dab, not even a pinch, but just dip that scraper tool in just the tiniest amount of Himalayan salt to get a bit of an abrasive effect on the outer sort of biofilm kind of plaque stain layer. And not brushing with salt every day, not brushing with anything abrasive on a daily basis, but this once in a while routine to do the whitening in addition to scraping and picking out the plaque, that hardened plaque, and then just sort of gently, not even scraping with the scraper, but just sort of like, not, I wouldn't call it brushing or scraping, just kind of pushing. It's more like using the scraper to gently push the softer material off the tooth, and then wipe that on a as sterile of a towel, as a paper towel as I have, wipe that away, and then end up ultimately with a very gently salt abraded experience without feeling like I'm having this daily cumulative effect that's warned against profusely of using abrasives in toothpaste or brushing teeth with abrasives, so that you're basically just sanding them down and making them even more vulnerable to disease and even more yellow, exposing what's beneath the surface and whatnot. So yeah, if I can get away with it the way I have, it's a bare minimum strategy. And yes, I would love to have, in this survival experiment, I would love to have a medically trained staff, if not staff, who would be, where we would train to perform these tasks on each other in a far more clinical and safe manner. But for now, it's just me taking care of myself. And I think if there's no methodology or secret that I'm trying to share, I'm just saying, hey, to me, it's an accomplishment that my teeth are not loose. They're not falling out. The cavities that were growing for all of my life up until when I started to get more serious about this, they've been stabilized, and they've been stabilized for at least 10 years. It's been 10 years since I started first oil pulling, and then maybe something like 5 years, about maybe 4 years that I've been brushing with coconut oil, and then doing this cyclical, more DIY deep cleaning. And then of course after that, sometimes, I mean, it's counterintuitive that I would use turmeric to that I would use turmeric after cleaning my teeth, because then it just stains them with turmeric again. But I like the idea of doing some antiseptic mouthwash, even if just coconut oil pulling, and doing the more standard oil pulling where you take about a teaspoon and swish it, coconut oil teaspoon or tablespoon rather, and swish it around for between, I've seen 5 to 20 minutes, that's about the range I'll do. But definitely when I do this dental kit usage, I'm stirring a lot of stuff up. There's going to be fragments of things. Obviously there's abrasion and bleeding a bit of the gums where the section takes place. And I want to head off bacteria taking advantage of any of that, any of those openings in the skin. But so far so good. I mean, I have not had any ill effects, even of taking that risk of, okay, I'm using these tools, I could be damaging the teeth or damaging the gums, and this is when I would be most vulnerable to infection, and when it would be most ironic and paradoxical if by using these means and measures to prevent having to go to the dentist, I put myself in a worse state of needing clinical care because of that effort. And I sometimes say to myself, maybe you should just leave it alone and just hope and pray and wait, and eventually you'll get back to where you'll go to one of these World Health Network approved clinical settings where they take extra precautions and they're being smart about epidemiology. That would be a luxury at this point. I definitely do not have the means to have that luxurious experience. Therefore, I'm at that, every so often I'm at that crossroads. Do I risk damage and infection and do this procedure and hope that, knowing that just because I got lucky before doesn't mean I'm going to get lucky again? And so far so good. I keep pushing through. One advancement I would say I've made in the last iteration was that I got outside and got into the sunlight and used one of my vehicles, the rear view mirror, just sort of crouched so that I could get well positioned in front of that rear view mirror, a side mirror, not inside the vehicle, but the side door rear view mirror. And with the right time of day, the right sun angle, that much blasting sunlight, luckily it's cool enough still to where I could get away with it without being burnt, although I was breaking a sweat. But to have that much sunlight, it's just a total game changer from having to try to do this with lighting in an indoor space, sort of in the shade. So I'm going to make sure to remember, take advantage of those days where you get sunlight and it's not too hot. And sometimes that means just doing it very early in the day. But that was a game changer. I got real good sunlight and I was able to just open wide and get a good visual angle into where that plaque builds up. I was able to safely scrape it out without gashing or poking or jabbing into anywhere in my gums that I wasn't intending to reach. And wherever I was at the intersection of the gums, I was able to be very gentle and careful. And yeah, so my strategy is simple as, and this is not a recommendation, it's just a report, it's just a captain's log. It's just been that between brushing with coconut oil daily and this cyclical, between brushing with coconut oil daily, flossing, not necessarily daily, but flossing more often than breaking out the toolkit, and then using that toolkit very carefully and just the tiniest bit, a fraction of a teaspoon ultimately, but it was just a few dabs to get a few grains of salt just on the most stubborn stained areas, which is really just a couple of patches here and there. And I don't drink coffee, I only drink green tea, but it's an unavoidable, even with brushing you're going to have the stains, it's just the way it is. So that worked. Tiniest of tiny bits of salt, very sparing, very careful, very gentle, very minimal, very careful strokes with the scraper to kind of really at that biofilm layer, just remove where the stain, remove that gunk that the stain is building up on. Once you know you're at where the real tooth is, really backing off is what I've been doing. And that's just, you know, I feel great. And there's people who will say that, and I'm one of them, that the cleaner your teeth are, the better your overall health and mental health are. Some people really draw a connection between oral hygiene and your sense of well-being, emotionally, psychologically, has a mental effect that's I don't think is metaphysical. I think it is biological. Just the healthier, more robust, the less war fronts that your immune system has to fight on, the more energy you have, the more resources you have to fight bigger enemies. Hopefully things like fighting all the cancer, that the cancer cells that we all have at all times. The emergent property of a tumor is the failure of the immune system to effectively remove and discard cancerous growth, nipping it in the bud, so to speak. That's my understanding. So, you know, minimal, no no sugar added, only natural and mostly fruit and not carb sugar intake, and then removing that from the teeth, just reducing the feed in the bloodstream for candida, all these ways to tactically advantage the immune system so that it can focus on the real enemies and not your own body with autoimmune effects. And yeah, to me it's just very, oh yeah, I remember it was on the Survival Medicine Hour show with Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, where I think he did say that in at least one of the wars where records were kept, something like 50% of sick call, meaning soldiers going into the medical tents with an issue, 50% of that were dental issues. God knows what meals ready to eat across the ages of and times of deployment and battlefields. God knows what kind of horrendous damage is done dentally with that kind of diet, what's in those meal packets, and what kind of oral hygiene protocols the soldiers were trained to do and what they actually maintain. But yeah, it's pretty scary. I mean, they say, you know, the things that would hold you back from a space mission or a hiking expedition, whatever it may be, it's like you really got to know whether or not you've got ticking time bombs in your mouth, because that those are the things that will knock you offline. Seems like as much as a broken ankle or hypothermia or anything else that you would have to be concerned about. So I'm very glad to know for myself that there seems to be no indication that I've got ticking time bombs of the teeth coming in that would result in needing to be extracted and pulled. Everything seems to be finding its balance as long as I continue to be proactive. And yeah, in a perfect world, there would be more World Health Network kind of endorsed places to go to feel safer. Within that perfect world, it would also be a situation where if you were off grid or you were living in austerity, in some sense, that you and your team, if you had the luxury of a team, your unit would be skilled in, trained in using these tools so that it wouldn't be such a tough call to do it yourself, or at least you had the training to do it yourself. I certainly wish that when times were simpler earlier in life, not only would I had better oral hygiene proactively, but I would have maybe gone somewhere to learn some of these techniques, if not going to a full-on actual accreditation training academy for dentistry. But if there is an Achilles heel of survivalism and austerity and off-grid, the Achilles heel is definitely oral health. And it's easy to, when it's not causing you throbbing, aching pain, and you're not obviously looking yourself in the mirror. I almost never look at myself in the mirror anymore. it's easy under those circumstances to kind of let things go and lose track of, you know, that's why I'm trying to be diligent about it. But I will admit I'll kind of put it off, going, is this a time where it makes sense? Like, if there are other environmental factors that make me say, you know what, this would be, if it's the dead middle of the summer, I don't want to risk anything going wrong, because trying to get out of here in that heat could be a death sentence on its own. So if I'm going to take the gamble, better do it now, like I just did, get it out of the way, and that way I can make it through the hot summer without even taking the risk of jabbing myself with one of these tools. But yeah, perfect world, we wouldn't be so alone. We would develop better practices earlier in life, and then when we need to do this, and we have access to clinical care, we could afford it, and it would be safe. And when we don't have that, we would ourselves or within a team or a unit be able to provide this basic care and maintenance for each other. And I guess, you know, everyone's going to be different, but it seems to me that there is, you know, there's probably lobbyists for the toothpaste and the standard sort of medical industry, lobbyists who would tell you, who would write articles and publish them and just sort of throw shade on the idea that anybody could ever safely or reliably do any of this on their own, that they need the most highly marketed or the biggest, I don't even say big dentistry, but the dental health industry and its most lucrative players that want to corner the market. The last thing they want to do, even though they might sell you some DIY home kits that they brand, the business incentive, bottom line, shareholders, etc., Wall Street. That Wall Street doesn't want Main Street to be empowered with DIY self-care. They'll take a cut of it because it is its own sort of its own niche, its own industry, the DIY sort of natural healthcare industry. They'll take a cut of it, but the lion's share of the propaganda is going to be coming from the big players. And yeah, there, it feels like the repeating line is, no studies have proven, and there's no scientific evidence that this has any benefit. And you know what? That's why I don't impose my methods on anyone. I don't want anyone to impose their methods on me. And I'm not making any scientific claims. I'm making anecdotal, folkloric claims. In my anecdotal, folkloric epistemology, this is what has got me this far, and it did not cost me exposure to a bunch of other disease vectors, and it didn't cost me an arm and a leg financially. And yeah, we'll see. I will be interesting to see if there is a point when I have the luxury to get, you know, normal checkup, and they tell me they're mortified, and they say, my God, you need help right now, and this is going to cost you more than it ever would have if you would have just gone on a regular basis. Either they're going to say that, or something between that and them saying, wow, for not having gone to a real dentist for this many years, you've managed to at least prevent worsening of conditions, stabilize them, and you've made relatively light work for us because you've done a bit, you know, done what you could on your own, and that is impressive because most people don't do anything, or they do things in a way that is damaging. So we'll see, but for now, I'm pretty shy about my smile. I have been for a long time, but at the very least I feel relatively secure and confident that I'm going to make it and continue to do all right. Mainly, yeah, diet being probably the most important determinant factor, because if you I mean, I know for myself, if I had a poor diet, I was going to make my oral hygiene a nightmare. So by improving my diet drastically, essentially being paleo, no sugar added, paleo, avoiding high sugar, avoiding even naturally high sugar foods, not completely, but being sparing with dried fruits and whatnot, and being sparing with juices and dried fruits mainly, which would concentrate natural sugars without adding them, being very careful with diet, and then being very careful with the strategy, it's worked so far, and wish me luck. And I hope you, if you are not doing the shadow work of taking responsibility for oral hygiene, whatever that means to you, hopefully listening to this makes you either go out and get the clinical care that you can afford and that you're comfortable with, or whatever you do, don't neglect it and don't be blind to it. It creeps up, and like anything else, the longer you wait to address it, the more expensive, more deadly, more catastrophic it can be. So hopefully, yeah. Anybody, like I've said before, I don't have a lot of visitors. Whoever endeavors to come out here and visit me, which there are some folks who want to do intensive permaculture boot camp type training with me out here, which is what this place is for, the first thing we're going to do is hardcore intensive first aid kind of skills brush up, whatever their background is. I know what mine is, and I feel like I want to make it a tradition that if we're off grid and remote off road like this, that the first module we do is to do at least an introductory but comprehensive survival medicine off grid wilderness first aid type coursework. Do that first, and then feel more confident that we could be, as we're doing other types of training, that we have we've done a refresher on our first aid, we've done a refresher on all this med stuff, and maybe we do a bit of a, in the process of doing that course, we actually do the hands-on to say, all right, let's spot each other to do some of the medical maintenance work that we may have been putting off, and get that out of the way and feel better about it, so we can minimize those risk factors. And for me, yeah, it would be great to, I might say, you know what, now that there's somebody here other than me who can spot me and watch my back, maybe I'll do some things that I've been too afraid to do, that I, just because if I've messed up, I wouldn't be able to haul myself out of here. You know what I mean? There's certain tasks I'd be like, well, there's a dangerous task that needs to get done, but I'm for damn sure not going to do it unless somebody is here to haul me out of here if I get injured doing it. So, you know, that's teamwork. But wishing the best for you out there, and hopefully wish the best for me. Cheers.